The Tiger by William Blake.
Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet? What the hammer, what the chain? In what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what dread grasp dare its deadly terrors clasp? When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry?
Edward Lear, The Owl and the Pussycat. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a £5 note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy said to the owl, you elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married, too long we have tarried. But what shall we do for a ring? They sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood a piggywig stood with a ring at the end of his nose. His nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the piggy, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon. And hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon. Kilkenny Cats. There once were 2 cats of Kilkenny. Each thought there was 1 cat too many. So they fought, and they fit, and they scratched, and they bit, till, excepting their nails and the tips of their tails, instead of 2 cats, there weren't any. For I Will Consider My Cat Geoffrey by Christopher Smart. For I will consider my cat Geoffrey. For he is a servant of the living God, duly and daily serving him. For at the first glance of the glory of God in the east, he worships in his way. For this is done by wreathing his body 7 times round with elegant quickness. For then he leaps up to catch the musk, which is the blessing of God upon his prayer. For he rolls upon prank to work it in. For having done duty and received blessing, he begins to consider himself. For this he performs in 10 degrees. For first, he looks upon his forepaws to see if they are clean. For secondly, he kicks up behind to clear away there. For thirdly, he works it upon stretch, with the forepaws extended. For fourthly, he sharpens his paws by wood. For fifthly, he washes himself. For sixthly, he rolls upon wash. For seventhly, he flees himself, that he may not be interrupted upon the beat. For eighthly, he rubs himself against a post. For ninthly, he looks up for his instructions. For tenthly, he goes in quest of food. For having considered God, and himself, he will consider his neighbour. For if he meets another cat, he will kiss her in kindness. For when he takes his prey, he plays with it to give it a chance. For one mouse in seven escapes by his dallying. For when his day's work is done, his business more properly begins. For he keeps the Lord's watch in the night against the adversary. For he counteracts the powers of darkness by his electrical skin and glaring eyes. For he counteracts the devil, who is death, by brisking about the life. For in his morning orisons he loves the sun, and the sun loves him. For he is of the tribe of tiger. For the cherub cat is a term of the angel tiger. For he has the subtlety and hissing of a serpent, which in goodness he suppresses. For he will not do destruction, if he is well fed, neither will he spit without provocation. For he purrs in thankfulness when God tells him he is a good cat. For he is an instrument for the children to learn benevolence upon. For every house is incomplete without him, and a blessing is lacking in the spirit. For the Lord commanded Moses concerning the cats at the departure of the children of Israel from Egypt. For every family had one cat at least in the bag. For the English cats are the best in Europe. For he is the cleanest in the use of his forepaws of any quadruped. For the dexterity of his defence is an instance of the love of God to him exceedingly. For he is the quickest to his mark of any creature. For he is tenacious of his point. For he is a mixture of gravity and waggery. For he knows that God is his saviour. For there is nothing sweeter than his peace when at rest. For there is nothing brisker than his life when in motion. For he is of the Lord's paw, and so indeed he is called by benevolence perpetually. Poor Geoffrey, poor Geoffrey, the rat has bit thy throat. For I bless the name of the Lord Jesus, that Geoffrey is better. For the divine spirit comes about his body to sustain it in complete cat. For his tongue is exceeding pure, so that it has in purity what it wants in music. For he is docile and can learn certain things. For he can set up with gravity, which is patience upon approbation. For he can fetch and carry, which is patience in employment. For he can jump over a stick, which is patience upon proof positive. For he can spraggle upon waggle at the word of command. For he can jump from an eminence into his master's bosom. For he can catch the cork and toss it again. For he is hated by the hypocrite and miser. For the former is afraid of detection, for the latter refuses the charge. For he camels his back to bear the first notion of business. For he is good to think on, if a man would express himself neatly. For he made a great figure in Egypt for his signal services. For he killed the ichneumon rat, very pernicious by land. For his ears are so acute that they sting again. For from this proceeds the passing quickness of his attention. For by stroking of him I have found out electricity. For I perceived God's light about him, both wax and fire. For the electrical fire is the spiritual substance which God sends from heaven to sustain the bodies both of man and beast. For God has blessed him in the variety of his movements. For though he cannot fly, he is an excellent clamberer, for his motions upon the face of the earth are more than any other quadruped. For he can tread to all the measures upon the music, for he can swim for life, for he can creep. To Mrs. Reynolds' Cat, by John Keats. Cat, who has passed thy grand climacteric, how many mice and rats hast in thy days destroyed? How many titbits stolen? Gaze with those bright, languid segments green,
and prick those velvet ears. But prithee, do not stick thy latent talents in me, and upraise thy gentle mew, and tell me all thy phrase of fish and mice and rats and tender chick. Nay, look not down, nor lick thy dainty wrists, for all the wheezy asthma, and for all thy tail's tip is nicked off, and though the fists of many a maid have given thee many a maul, still is that fur as soft as when the lists, in youth, thou enterest on glass-bottled wall. Puss, Walter de la Mare. Puss loves man's winter fire, now that the sun so soon leaves the hours cold it warmed in burning June. She purrs full length before the heaped-up hissing blaze. Drowsy in slumber, down her head she lays. While he with whom she dwells sits snug in his ingle-nook, stretches his legs to the flame, and reads his book. The Cat and the Moon by William Butler Yeats. The cat went here and there, and the moon spun round like a top, and the nearest kin of the moon, the creeping cat, looked up. Black Minnaloush stared at the moon, for wonder and wail as he would. The pure cold light in the sky troubled his animal blood. Minnaloush runs in the grass, lifting his delicate feet. Do you dance, Minnaloush, do you dance? When two close kindred meet, what better than call a dance? Maybe the moon may learn, tired of that courtly fashion, a new dance turn. Minnaloush creeps through the grass from moonlit place to place. The sacred moon overhead has taken a new phase. Does Minnaloush know that his pupils will pass from change to change, and that from round to crescent, from crescent to round, they range? Minnaloush creeps through the grass alone, important and wise, and lifts to the changing moon his changing eyes. Pussy Can Sit by the Fire and Sing by Rudyard Kipling. Pussy can sit by the fire and sing. Pussy can climb a tree, or play with a silly old cork and string to muse herself, not me. But I like Binky, my dog, because he knows how to behave. So Binky's the same as the first friend was, and I am the man in the cave. Pussy will play Man Friday till it's time to wet her paw and make her walk on the windowsill for the footprint Crusoe saw. Then she fluffles her tail and mews and scratches and won't attend. But Binky will play whatever I choose, and he is my true first friend. Pussy will rub my knees with her head, pretending she loves me hard. But the very minute I go to my bed, Pussy runs out in the yard, and there she stays till the morning light, so I know it's only pretend. But Binky, he snores at my feet all night, and he is my firstest friend. Milk for the Cat by Harold Munro. When the tea is brought at 5 o'clock, and all the neat curtains are drawn with care, the little black cat with bright green eyes is suddenly purring there. At first she pretends, having nothing to do, she has come in merely to blink by the grate. But though tea may be late, or the milk may be sour, she is never late. And presently her agate eyes take a soft, large, milky haze, and her independent, casual glance becomes a stiff, hard gaze. Then she stamps her claws, or lifts her ears, or twists her tail and begins to stir, till suddenly all her lithe body becomes one breathing, trembling purr. The children eat and wriggle and laugh. The two old ladies stroke their silk. But the cat is grown small and thin with desire, transformed to a creeping lust for milk. The white saucer, like some full moon, descends at last from the clouds of the table above. She sighs and dreams and thrills and glows, transfigured with love. She nestles over the shining rim, buries her chin in the creamy sea. Her tail hangs loose. Each drowsy paw is doubled under each bending knee. A long, dim ecstasy holds her life. Her world is an infinite shapeless white, till her tongue has curled the last holy drop. Then she sinks back into the night, draws and dips her body to heap her sleepy nerves in the great armchair, lies defeated and buried deep 3 or 4 hours, unconscious there. The Cat of the House by Ford Madox Ford. Over the hearth with my minishing eyes I muse, until after the last coal dies. Every tunnel of the mouse, every channel of the cricket, I have smelt. I have felt the secret shifting of the moulded rafter, and heard every bird in the thicket. I see you, nightingale, up in the tree. I, born of a race of strange things, of deserts, great temples, great kings, in the hot sands where the nightingale never sings. The Rat Catcher and Cats by John Gay. The rats by night such mischief did, Betty was every morning chid. They undermined whole sides of bacon. Her cheese was sapped, her tarts were taken, her pasties fenced with thickest paste were all demolished and laid waste. She cursed the cat for want of duty, who left her foes a constant booty. An engineer of noted skill, engaged to stop the growing ill, from room to room he now surveys their haunts, their works, their secret ways, finds where they scape an ambuscade, and whence the nightly sally is made. An envious cat, from place to place, unseen, attends his silent pace. She saw that if his trade went on, the purring race must be undone. So secretly removes his baits, and every stratagem defeats. Again he sets the poison toils, and puss again the labour foils. What foe to frustrate my design, my schemes thus nightly countermines? Incensed he cries, this very hour the wretch shall bleed beneath my power. So said, a ponderous trap he brought. And in fact, poor puss was caught. Smuggler, says he, thou shalt be made a victim to our loss of trade. The captive cat, with piteous muse, for pardon, life, and freedom sues. A sister of the science spare, one interest is our common care. What insolence, the man replied, shall cats with us the game divide? Were all your interloping band extinguished or expelled the land, we rat-catchers might raise our fees, sole guardians of the nation's cheese. A cat, who saw the lifted knife, thus spoke and saved her sister's life. In every age and clime we see, two of a trade can ne'er agree. Each hates his neighbour for encroaching, squire stigmatises squire for poaching. Beauties with beauties are in arms, and scandal pelts each other's charms.
kings too, their neighbour kings dethrone, in hope to make the world their own. But let us limit our desires, not warlike beauties, kings and squires, for though we both one prey pursue, there's game enough for us and you. Loving and Liking by William Wordsworth. Long may you love your pensioner mouse, though one of a tribe that torment the house, nor dislike her cruel sport the cat, deadly foe both of mouse and rat. Remember, she follows the law of her kind, and instinct is neither wayward nor blind. Then think of her beautiful gliding form, her tread that would scarcely crush a worm, and her soothing song by the winter fire, soft as the dying throb of the lyre. The Kitten and the Falling Leaves by William Wordsworth.
That way look, my infant, lo! What a pretty baby show! See the kitten on the wall, sporting with the leaves that fall? Withered leaves, one, two, and three, from the lofty elder tree. Through the calm and frosty air of this morning bright and fair, eddying round and round they sink, softly, slowly, one might think, from the motions that are made, each little leaf conveyed, sylph or fairy, hither tending, to this lower world descending, each invisible and mute in his wavering parachute. But the kitten, how she starts, crouches, stretches, paws, and darts. First at one, and then its fellow, just as light and just as yellow. There are many now, now one, now they stop, and there are none. What intenseness of desire in her upward eye of fire! With a tiger leap halfway, now she meets the coming prey, lets it go as fast, and then has it in her power again. Now she works with three or four, like an Indian conjurer. Quick! As he in feats of art, far beyond in joy of heart. Were her antics played in the eye of a thousand standers-by, clapping hands with shout and stare, what would little Tabby care for the plaudits of the crowd? Over happy to be proud, over wealthy in the treasure of her own exceeding pleasure.
Hodge the Cat by Sarah Chauncey Woolsey. Burly and big, his books among, good Samuel Johnson sat, with frowning brows and wig askew, his snuff-strewn waistcoat far from new, so stern and menacing his air that neither Black Sam nor the maid to knock or interrupt him dare. Yet close beside him, unafraid, sat Hodge the Cat. This participle, the doctor wrote, the modern scholar cavils at, but, even as he penned the word, a soft protesting note was heard. The doctor fumbled with his pen, the dawning thought took wings and flew. The sound repeated, come again, it was a faint reminding mew, from Hodge the Cat. The dictionary was laid down. The doctor tied his vast cravat, and down the buzzing street he strode, taking an often trodden road, and halted at a well-known stall. "Fishmonger," spoke the doctor gruff, "give me six oysters, that is all. Hodge knows when he's had enough. Hodge is my cat." Then home, Puss dined, and while in sleep he chased a visionary rat. His master sat him down again, rewrote his page, re-nibbed his pen, each I was dotted, each T was crossed, he laboured on for all to read, nor deemed that time was waste or lost, spent in supplying the small need of Hodge the Cat. The dear old doctor, fierce of mine,
untidy, arbitrary, fat. What gentle thought his name enfold. So generous of his scanty gold, so quick to love, so hot to scorn, kind to all sufferers under heaven, a tenderer despot ne'er was born. His big heart held a corner even for Hodge the Cat. Let Sleeping Cats Lie, William Cowper. A poet's cat, sedate and grave, as poets would wish to have, was much addicted to inquire for nooks to which she might retire, and where, secure as mouse in chink, she might repose or sit and think. I know not where she caught her trick. Nature perhaps herself had cast her in such a mould philosophique, or else she learned it of her master. Sometimes ascending, debonair, an apple tree or lofty pear, lodged with convenience in the fork, she watched the gardener at his work. Sometimes her ease and solace sought in an old empty watering pot, there wanting nothing save a fan, to seem some nymph in her sedan, apparelled in exactest sort, and ready to be borne in court. How a Cat Was Annoyed and a Poet Was Booted, by Guy Wetmore Carroll. A poet had a cat. There's nothing odd in that. I might make a little pun about the muse. But what is really more remarkable, she wore a pair of pointed patent leather shoes. And I doubt me greatly whether, ere you heard the like of that, pointed shoes of patent leather on a cat. His time he used to pass writing sonnets on the grass. I might say something good on pen and sword, while the cat sat near at hand, trying hard to understand the poems he occasionally roared. I myself possess a feline, but when poetry I roar, he is sure to make a beeline for the door. The poet, cent by cent, all his patrimony spent. I might tell how he went from verse to worse, till the cat was sure she could, by advising, do him good, so addressed him in a manner that was terse. We are bound towards the scuppers, and the time has come to act, or we'll both be on our uppers for a fact. On her boot she fixed her eye, but the boot made no reply. I might say, couldn't speak to save its soul. And the foolish bard, instead of responding, only read a verse that wasn't bad upon the whole, and it pleased the cat so greatly, though she knew not what it meant, that I'll quote approximately how it went. If I should live to be the last leaf upon the tree, I might put in, I think I just as leaf, let them smile as I do now at the old forsaken bough. Well, he'd plagiarise it boldly in brief. But the cat of simple breeding couldn't read the lines between, so she took it to a leading magazine. She was jarred and very sore when they showed her to the door. I might hit off the door that was ajar. To the spot she swift returned, where the poet sighed and yearned, and she told him that he'd gone a little far. "Your performance with this rhyme has made me absolutely sick," she remarked. "I think the time has come to kick." I could fill up half the page with descriptions of her rage. I might say that she went a bit too fur. When he smiled and murmured, "Shoo!" "There is one thing I can do," she answered with a wrathful kind of purr. "You may shoo me, and it suits you, but I feel my conscience bid me as tit for tat to boot you," which she did. The moral of the plot, though I say it as should not, is an editor is difficult to suit, but again there are other times when the man who fashions rhymes is a rascal, and a bully one to boot. On a Cat, Aging, by Alexander Gray. He blinks upon the hearthrug and yawns in deep content, accepting all the comforts that Providence has sent. Louder he purrs, and louder, in one glad hymn of praise, for all the night's adventures, for quiet, restful days. Life will go on forever, with all that cat can wish, warmth and the glad procession of fish and milk and fish. Only the thought disturbs him. He's noticed once or twice the times are somehow breeding a nimbler race of mice.
Ode on the death of a favourite cat drowned in a tub of goldfishes by Thomas Gray. 'Twas on a lofty vase's side, where China's gayest art had dyed the azure flowers that blow, demurest of the tabby kind, the pensive Selima reclined, gazed on the lake below. Her conscious tail her joy declared, the fair round face, the snowy beard, the velvet of her paws, her coat that with tortoise vies, her ears of jet, the emerald eyes, she saw and purred applause. Still had she gazed, but midst the tide, two beauteous forms were seen to glide, the genii of the stream, their scaly armour's Tyrian hue, the richest purple to the view, betrayed a golden gleam. The hapless nymph with wonder saw, a whisker first, and then a claw. With many an ardent wish, she stretched in vain to reach the prize. What female heart can gold despise? What cat's averse to fish? Presumptuous maid! With looks intent again she stretched, again she bent, nor knew the gulf between. A malignant fate sat by and smiled. The slippery verge her feet beguiled, she tumbled headlong in. 8 times emerging from the flood, she mewed to every watery god, some speedy aid to send. No dolphin came, no nereid stirred, nor cruel Tom, nor Susan heard. A favourite has no friend. From hence, ye beauties undeceived, no one false step is ne'er retrieved, and be with caution bold. Not all that tempt your wondering eyes and heedless hearts is lawful prize, nor all that glisters gold. A Pet's Prayer. Anonymous. If it should be that I grow frail and weak, and pain should keep me from my sleep, then you must do what must be done, for this last battle can't be won. Don't let your grief stay your hand, for this day more than the rest, your love and friendship stand the test. We've had so many years, what is to come can hold no fear. You'd not want me to suffer, so when the time comes, please let me go. Take me where my needs they'll tend, only stay with me to the end, and hold me firm and speak to me until my eyes no longer see. I know in time you'll see it is a kindness you do for me. Although my tale its last has waved, from pain and suffering I've been saved. Don't grieve it should be you who this thing decides to do. We've been so close, we two, these years. Don't let your heart hold tears. Smile, for we walked together for a while. First Day in Heaven. Anonymous. Is heaven all you ask of it, O little cat? Did Peter fit a halo for your graceless head? Is there a quilt for your special bed?
and a bowl of cream just out of reach of your thieving paw? Or do they teach you not to steal in paradise? Does the flapping of their wings entice? Do you scamper and swing on a golden fence? Or are they teaching you reverence? And are there really golden thrones up there? Or do the mighty ones have nice fat chairs that you can claw and tear and snag with an impious paw? And do the angels understand that a little cat in a lonely land still longs for a kiss and a friendly cuff? Celestial joys are not enough. Please, some small saint in shining white, hold him close in your arms tonight.